Today we celebrate the Feast of the Epiphany, the appearance of Jesus the Messiah to the world. In classical Greek, the word epiphany can refer also to the appearance of the dawn. As Isaiah, writing 500 years before Jesus' birth, does in our first reading. See, darkness covers the earth, and thick clouds cover the peoples. But upon you the Lord shines, and over you appears his glory. Raise your eyes and look about. This appearance can be intimate. Jesus touching your heart or mind with peace in time of difficulty. Or the appearance can be cosmic, the Prince of Peace revealed to Herod and to the Magi. Is it possible for us to see Jesus' latest epiphany in three recent events? First, about 280 American bishops are in retreat just outside Chicago. No lay staff, no other priests. Guiding their retreat is Raniero Cantalamessa, a Capuchin priest who is the preacher to the papal household. I have heard him speak, and he's excellent. Second, a hard-hitting 8-page letter from the Pope is also guiding their prayer. Francis asks them to reflect on, quote, the steps you are taking to combat the culture of abuse and to deal with the crisis of credibility. The Church's credibility has been seriously undercut and diminished by these sins and crimes, but even more by the efforts made to deny or conceal them. The mentality that would cover things up, far from helping to resolve conflicts, enables them to fester and cause even greater hurt to the network of relationships that today we are called to heal and restore. Loss of credibility calls for a specific approach, since it cannot be regained by issuing stern decrees or simply creating new committees or improving flowcharts as if we were in charge of a Department of Human Resources. End quote. Then Francis takes them to task on infighting. Quote, the loss of credibility also raises painful questions about the way we relate to one another. This requires not only a new approach to management, but also a change in our mindset, our way of prayer, our handling of power and money, our exercise of authority, and our way of relating to one another and to the world around us. Without a clear and decisive focus, everything we do risks being tainted by self-referentiality, self-preservation and defensiveness, and thus doomed from the start. Let us try to break the vicious cycle of recrimination, undercutting and discrediting, by avoiding gossip and slander in the pursuit of a path of prayerful and contrite acceptance of our limitations and sins, and the promotion of dialogue, discussion, and discernment. End quote. Finally, third, the presidents of bishops' conferences worldwide will meet in Rome in late February, in a meeting organized by two cardinal archbishops, an archbishop, and a Jesuit priest. The Pope's letter seems to me right on target in tone and content. A retreat for discernment is very Ignatian, and the Vatican meeting will ensure worldwide applicability. So, can you and I believe that Jesus' epiphany is the motive force behind the bishop's retreat, the Pope's letter, and the February bishop's meeting? We are called by Jesus himself to be hopeful, but we're also called to be thoughtful, discerning good and evil around us. I find myself seesawing between hope and doubt, hope and fear, hope and no hope, as I reflect on the good and the evil. I want to have hope, but I have to admit that having hope is hard, sometimes nearly impossible. It's true that Jesus grew up and became the Messiah, but Herod's murdering a generation of children went unpunished, as far as I know, and the historical record on mass murderers and mass abusers is not promising. I am grateful for what the bishops and Francis are now doing, but I keep asking myself, why does it take so much external pressure to get them to do the right, decent thing that seems so obvious and not even that hard? On some days I feel like Candide, returning from his hero's journey to cultivate his own garden. In my garden, I can be hopeful, but I can't live a solitary life. And when I re-engage, I become discouraged when I find the bishop's response so slow and so beguiling. And so begrudging. But then I wonder about how God's justice and mercy might be made real in the next life, especially for bishops, cardinals, and popes, but for us too. I imagine purgatory not as a place of hellfire and smoke, but rather as a place where kindly but determined angels would sit, like referees in black and white striped outfits, each one in a comfortable room in front of a large flat-screen TV, each with a newly arrived soul. In a gentle way, the angel referee would slowly guide the deceased not through an instant replay, but a slow replay of their lives, stopping the action and asking each bishop, cardinal, and pope, and each one of us, to reconsider the individual events in our lives, and asking questions like, what were you thinking? How did that work out for you and for everyone else? If you had to do it again, how might you choose? There would be no scoreboard because God would want everyone to win, and no time clock. Everyone would have time and all eternity, with the angel referees prompting to rethink what they had said and done. And some would have a very painful time of it, because angels are messengers of God's justice, whose job is to reveal justice to the minds of souls as yet living in darkness. And the angel referees could make the final call. With that much time and such wise, persistent guides, most would probably make it to the podium for their trophy. Angels might have to guide a few of the obdurate to long-term parking, but such souls would have had a chance, and in the end, would have put themselves there. In the meantime, you and I are on the seesaw. Jesus began his life in his mother's lap, in the stable, as the great artists have shown us, but surrounded by the blood and death of children and the corruption of the Jewish king. Jesus ended his life in his mother's lap, as Michelangelo showed us in the Pieta, still surrounded by the blood, death, and corruption of civic and religious leaders. My question to myself is always, does it really have to be this hard? And the answer seems to be, no, it doesn't have to be. But yes, it's going to be, as long as people, especially people in positions of power, make self-serving choices. The blood, death, and corruption are constant. And yet he is the Prince of Peace and the source of our hope. On this great feast, we can come to realize that if we have to live in the seesaw, then at least we can remain anchored to hope, and anchored to remain hope there on the seesaw, because Jesus, the source of our hope, accompanied by his blessed mother, has the power to anchor us there in love. So in our Eucharist today, let's share the divine love and the divine hope with one another in communion, and leave here imbued with new hope to share with our world, so that the world too can find hope and peace.